Hi, welcome to this week's episode of Denim and Blazers. I have Mr. Dev Nandlal. Did I say it right?
Yep.
I mess it up every time. Nandlal.
You're good.
Okay, thank you. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Devin. I'm sorry, Davey, because I keep wanting to call you Davey.
You're fine. What are friends for?
Yes, that's what I'm used to calling you. Davey's the owner of ANK Real Estate Services. And can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So back in 2002, I got licensed in the professional TREC license, professional home inspector license. Didn't do I was late in 20 2000 and did I say 2022?
You said 2002.
2002. Okay, man, I almost went blank for a second there. So I didn't do my first inspection till around January of 2003, being licensed so late in 2002. So kind of tell everybody about 20 years, but it's right at about 19, just with the experience that I've had. In that time, I've taken numerous classes and courses with regards to HVAC, electrical, foundations. I'm actually certified in OSHA just to be on job sites. Post Tension Institute, which is the cables that they run through the foundation before they pull it and they make a post tension slab, went
Okay.
and we got certified in that a couple of years ago. I'm also a licensed pesticide applicator. And there's the energy code, I got it licensed in that, and I also, I'm sorry, certified in that, and certified also in accessibility, which is handicap access, where people, if they're buying a commercial building or something, and they need someone to review what they have that's in there. So just the inspection industry has so many different facets of where you can grow or become a specialist in. It's there's no lack of knowledge out there that you can attain because it's available in what your interests are. So been doing it now for about 19 years, and really we saw a boom last year, and a lot of the obviously the pre-owned home market's been out there and it's been kind of rising, but when that market kind of got to its max, I mean the new home market with the cost and increases of lumber and materials and supply chain, all that skyrocketed, but people were jumping on those right away. So that's kind of taken a leap forward as well and started progressively getting more and more busy. So we've been doing a little bit of those as well. We've gotten quite a few calls. I think one thing that people don't really realize is that it's not like a new car. A new home is not like a new car. I mean, there's different people. If you equate it to like a Ford factory or a Toyota factory or anything like that, those hands that are being put on that are the same hands from the same company at the same time all day long. Whereas it's not like that on the in the home industry. There's different contractors for each trade that come in under a general contractor, so they're all working and crossing each other. So as an inspector, our biggest job is to make sure that if the electrical guy went in, the plumbing guy did not go in and either cut a wire or cut a notch too large on something. So that's kind of been where the lack of knowledge on the consumer side has been. So a lot of people, I mean, they customize. Each house is customized too, because you get a different paint job and stuff like that, but that's on the surface. That's the skin of the home. And I'll kind of elaborate a little bit more on that. But that's kind of my introduction so far and kind of getting you to where I think the market is for inspectors at this particular point. So.
It's most definitely needed. A lot of times people do buy new homes. On my last interview with Jessica Eblen, she's the broker where I just moved my license to. And we kind of got to discussing toward the end about needing a realtor during a purchase of a new home. But it's also important in that process to have an inspector too, because just because it's new, there actually can be a lot of things wrong with the home.
Right, right. Yeah. The biggest thing I see as an inspector with regards to, there's two, and there's from the physical aspect of it, there's also the, I don't want to say the administrative aspect. It's not a clerical aspect. It's more of an administrative aspect, because if you think about it, the clients that a realtor has, you're the attorney for them. You're going to battle for them in front of those people, the builders and or the sellers for that matter. But it's at that point, it's both realtors. And then usually you're dealing with the salesperson on the new home side. So you're going in with the requests, wants, and needs of your client, and you're trying to make sure that, let's say the inspector wrote up 50 things on the house, and 25 of those things are okay for the client because they're willing to deal with some of that stuff, which they shouldn't have to on a new house, but they're okay. And there's those 25 important things that, hey, we want to have these things done. Well, at the end of the day, when you talk about it, and you go back to the builder and or the salesperson, and they're saying, we're not fixing anything because we could sell this house. When you walk away, we can sell this house in 5 minutes. I mean, where's the leverage at on there? Where's the leverage for you other than my inspection report? And if that inspection report is not giving you any leverage, what's the chances of it having any teeth with the builder and moving that forward? So I'll give you a couple of examples. First-time home buyers that I had just recently up in Montgomery, from the very get-go, this whole thing seemed like it was off, and I don't know why, but it did. And I get to the neighborhood, and the street that they have listed in Har is not even the same name that's on the street sign when you get there. Wow. So now I'm looking for a house on a street that doesn't even. It's not on any map because it doesn't match. So we call the client's realtor and, oh no, that's the name of the street. Well, I'm going to take a picture of the sign and tell you what it shows on there. Oh, wow, we never noticed that. Okay, well, I have to notice that, because if I inspect the wrong house, then now we're looking at 3-4 hours of time that's just been wasted on the wrong property. So I had to go back to their HAR page and look at everything, match everything up just in front of the front goes on there. Now that's the very biggest part of it as far as getting to the house. Now getting there, one thing I don't do, and I'm a stickler for it now because it's been just too many times, is that they want to get the house inspected prior to a certain time, but they're still not done with the house, meaning they're still contractors in there putting in either fixing drywall or putting in baseboards or painting baseboards. Usually it's the painters. I'm going to just say that honestly, it's usually just the painters or the guy that's doing this caulking and sealing. What this particular house, they had just painted all the walls and all the doors and everything. So couldn't open any doors. I sure as heck couldn't see if they were going to hit the wall, because if it did hit the wall, then I was going to get paint on the doorknob. Right. There's just all these things. I'm like, you know, this is not good. So we left the project and we said, we're going to do it another day. The realtor, she was upset. She scheduled all this. The builder said, oh, we'll just tell the guys to get out of there. Well, you have wet paint. There's nothing I can do if there's wet paint. I can't touch the walls. I can't make sure that they're not deflecting in any way. So there's those aspects of it. I mean, that alone is going to drive somebody nuts when they're having to go around the house. But at the same time, what are they going to do? They're just going to try to keep going through. And I was that type of inspector before that said, you know, I'm going to do what I can to make sure they get their inspection with the time that they allocate and they paid for. Well, I had to stop and say, look, you're not going to get what you're paying for out of this. I had to look at it from the other point of view. Did you check this part of the wall? No, I did not. It was wet. But did you check this? No, it was wet. Oh, did you check this? Well, they were working right here and I didn't get there yet. That's not giving my client the sense that I gave them their money's worth out of anything. Now, was it a long drive, an hour away? Yeah, it was an hour away, but I chose not to do it. So we went back, we did the inspection, got on the roof, all kinds of problems on the roof. You can see deflections going down. You can see where shingles weren't lined up properly. Brand new house, a builder. And I won't call any names, but at the same time, this should not be on it. When we finished the inspection, I'll just kind of skip forward a little bit. When we finished this inspection, the builder, superintendent or foreman job site, says he doesn't go on roofs. So he has no idea what it looks like up there. Take only my word for it on the pictures. The client had to fight. I said, I guided the client all the way through this for about 3 weeks until they were able to get manufacturer's certified installer out and the VP of the superintendent out to look at the roof together and see that it wasn't my word and the certified installer's word to let them know this is not right. And there was a foundation issue too, but I didn't even get into that yet. But anyway.
I believe it. I had a client purchase. She wanted to build a new home from the ground up. You know, you go through that whole exciting part of picking out your lot and going to the design center and all of that. And it was during the time before COVID, but this particular neighborhood was having issues with the water and getting everything set up. So they had wood that had set and set and set.
It was warped.
It was warped. It had mold already growing on it, you know? And it was like a lot of it. And she did a phase inspection, but it was a battle because even with the inspection, they still were arguing about the mold, saying that it wasn't any mold. And the only reason we were able to get out of it and for her to get her money back was because of the inspection. And that's with the superintendent arguing about the wood. I was like, it's right here. So it's crazy.
Yeah, they and mold inspections aren't cheap either. I mean, if you had to get someone to come out and give you a certified mold test, they're not cheap. So you're looking at least $300 just on, at the base level.
You know? For her, it was important because she had a child who had a real bad allergic reaction to it. And so it was important for her to go through that process. So,
No, the mold in itself, even adults can build, as they get older, can build or get problems from that. As we get older, it's like the babies, they don't have their immune system and they build it up. As we get older, we build it up. And then as you get older, you start losing that again. So, she could very well have long-term problems after that, if that's the case.
Yeah, it was crazy, but it's exactly what you said. We got out of it and they turned around and sold the house to someone else who didn't do all
because the market's that good and they will never disclose it. They're not required to disclose it on a new home.
Yeah, that's amazing.
There's no disclosure that takes place.
So what is the inspection process for like doing the phases for a new home?
So phase inspections are expensive just because there's so many of them. When I say so many, we typically do three, which is before they pour the foundation, we go and inspect if the foundation is per the drawings that the engineer designed based on the soil tests for that particular lot. In a master plan community, they usually do, it's usually sampled all around the area. So it's not like that particular lot had one. And the engineer will tend to over design just because they don't have specifics of that particular lot. But let's say a company like a big name brand company out there, company A, whatever, they have specific designs for their that they use in certain subdivisions because that's their main objective is to create the same atmosphere and cosmetic appeal all the way across.
Right.
So that's they use that floor plan and they'll do the front of the house looking the same. But typically out in this area, you're going to get an expansive soil type of a foundation with perimeter beams, interior beams and cables that go through it because our soils do very well, in my opinion, with post-tension slabs or our slabs do very well with expansive soils that we have. So they work together pretty well just because the post-tension slab will hold it together. And what a post-tension slab is, if I can kind of just show you on my fingers, is it's a foundation that's poured and it's got cables through it. And when they're done and the cable and the concrete's about 50 to 75% cured a little bit, they pull it a little bit. And then when they build the frame, it pushes back down the foundation. So it has a live load, dead load on there that will level back out the foundation and keep it from cracking. What that post tension is for is if there is a crack that's going to take place, it's going to hold it together because it's all under tension. Basically like putting a rubber band around something, but through the inside. Okay. So that part of the process is very important for the long-term success of the foundation, because concrete's going to cure, rebar is going to be in there, it's going to have the cables. Chances are you're not going to have a big problem for a good little while, meaning about 4 to 5 years. But as it starts to age and cure, you're going to start seeing settlement, because maybe there's voids under the pad or something like that, which there shouldn't be because it's supposed to be compacted soil. But, you know, everything's done so fast these days. They're grading out the soil. They're putting things down. Cables, if you're not averse on what cables to look for on some of these things, it can be where they put the wrong cables. I've seen where they put the wrong cables and they've had to redo it before they poured because they put the wrong cable in the wrong section. Basically they're supposed to be two instead of one or something like that. So it doesn't happen too often because the guys that are doing the work, they're going right off the drawing. It's literally right there and they look at it and they go and do what they need to do. But you're just trying to make sure that part of the process is done and there's no tears in the slab, because quite honestly, as an inspector, even if I was not on the pest control side of it, I'm still looking for openings in the plastic that they put down. I'm looking for where the pipes come out of the soil into the foundation for the toilets and stuff. I'm looking to make sure that's all sealed up appropriately. I'm making sure that the where the form boards are, the dirt's not falling back in below that. So there's a lot of stuff that takes place with regards to that. And obviously it's the most important part of the house because it's supporting everything under there. And you want to make sure that it's done properly. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the gist of the post-tensioning part of it. But the post-tensioning part is done about 7 to 10 days after. They'll bring a big machine in and they'll start pulling all those cables at 50,000, 55,000 PSI, depending on what is required from the engineer on that soil for that slab. So then there's the curing process, but usually about 7 to 10 days, they're already starting to put up form board framing on there to start building the house, because really it does cure about 50% within that time. It just takes... So I believe the study was within 28 to 30 days, you're at about 85 to 90% or somewhere in that area. So it'll take the next lifetime for it to completely cure, because the concrete's always curing and absorbing moisture and curing and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's the...
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So like when you look and, you know, you start the building process, you go into the homes and let's say they're just starting to put up the structure, the framing. And sometimes I've seen like little cracks in the foundation. Is that normal? Of course you hear different things.
So it depends on the type of crack. It depends on where it's located. It depends on what they did for the curing process on there. Because sometimes there is an accelerator that's put into the concrete to help cure it faster. Okay. Now, with that being said, cracks, in my opinion, are not good in any form or fashion. However, hydration cracks are basically where water is being squeezed up out of it because it is curing. Hydration cracks, you will see some surface separation, but if you were to look towards the side of it, maybe go to the edge of the foundation somewhere and see that it's just barely like a paper thin on the edge of the, and it's not going down deep. But if you get those that are going down into the foundation, it may be an area that needs to be looked at a little closer or an eye kept on it, because there's really not much you can do at that point because you're just looking at it from an angle, right? Just kind of taking a step back, that house that I was talking about earlier, when I was in the garage, there was a cable that came through, a red sleeve cable that came through. Now, I've done a lot of foundation inspections. I'm certified by the Post Tensioning Institute. I've never seen that before. And all the training that we've done is if you see something like that, it's a compromised cable. These people called in, I don't know how many different people that were in the foundation industry and said, yes, this is okay. The repair that they did was they cut it and they surfaced over it. So the foundation guy, in the world of concrete, there's no license for foundation. In the world of roofing, there's no license for roofing. Just you're a concrete guy, you're a roof guy. They brought their engineer in, not the guy that designed that foundation, but the company's engineer came in and said it was okay. It was up to par with their repairs. I'm out of it. I said my piece. I did my part. I can't make them bring the engineer on file because they won't even give the gentleman the engineering paperwork. That's another thing. When we go to do inspections on homes, 99.9% of the time, they will never give us the drawings. They're like, oh, you can come out to the office and look at the drawings, but you can't take them with you. And it's like, you expect me to do a foundation based on me remembering what's on that drawing in there, where the cable should be, how high they should be set, what they required as far as the depth on that cable, where the width of all those interior beams are supposed to be, what number rebar they're supposed to be using. It's not possible. It's not possible. And anybody that takes any kind of job like that on without getting the drawings, and they will disclose it. Any inspector or any foundation engineer that will go out and look at that without knowing what those specs are will disclose based on common knowledge of this particular slab, meaning this is what it should be, 18 inches in depth. It should be 12 inches wide here. It should have a number 5 cable, a number 5 rebar here. You know, that kind of thing. Or here are the common mistakes that are seen. The sleeves are torn. They haven't been taped over with waterproof tape or anything like that. So you're going to get, there's so many aspects that you run into. There's inspectors that won't even do these inspections because they're tired of wasting their clients' time going out there and doing that. So it gets frustrating just because you're dealing with an entity that does not want to give you information. But at the same time, if you can provide that information of what you're not getting to the client and that agent, they're going to realize, hey, we're not getting everything that we're paying for here with regards to the builder supply. Because, you know, when you're signing that initial paperwork, oh, yeah, we're going to work with your inspector. We're going to work with you. We're going to get you everything you need. And it's a great thing when they get your $15,000 to $2,000 down payment. And when the inspector shows up, there's no one that's going to answer them. So that's really the basics of a foundation inspection. Inside the forms, outside, we want to look at the grading and make sure that the grading is still sloping away. And that's in preparation for the final grade. You want to make sure that final grade is still sloping away. Or the one that I just recently did in Magnolia for a pre-pour foundation inspection, the grading was all around. And the foundation guy met me out there, but I had just gotten there, so I couldn't ask him any questions, and I was still looking around. But when he got the report, he told the person that's building the house, he goes, man, that inspection was more in-depth than I thought it was going to be. And I was there for an hour, hour and a half, getting tore up by mosquitoes. But at the same time, he's like, I never expected him to put all that information. I put a whole link of pictures on there. And so they're not saying this inspector is full of it. I gave them evidence of what I'm seeing out there. And that way they can do right by the client and say, we're going to fix all these things. We're going to get the chairs right. So the chair, when you hear the word chair, it's a piece of plastic. It looks like a triangle, but that plastic basically holds up the rebar. Oops, I'm sorry. Holds up the rebar and the cables. So when the concrete is poured, it doesn't fall down to the bottom of that form. So there's a lot of things that help that whole situation out there. And as minor as they may be, it does work. It's been proven to work in a lot of conditions.
Hi, it's Sean Vanderpool with First Class Real Estate Luxury Living, here to help you reach your real estate investment goals. If you're ready to purchase, sell, lease a residential or commercial property, I'm the realtor for you. You can reach me at 281-713-0832. Again, that's 281-713-0832. and I would love to help you make your move.
So,
It's funny, you were the first inspector that really just explained the way the grading and the sloping of the yard. And it's funny because now I can literally kind of spot sometime when you go to homes and you can see sometimes it's going toward the house instead of away, all those different things.
And the key to that is to, you know, on a final inspection is to make sure that that water is draining away efficiently, right? It's not sitting in the side of the house where that was swelled or just going to swell up and hold water for 36 hours. There's actually a code or something to that extent, or a common code within the drainage industry of landscapers and stuff. If it sits for longer than or for over 30 to 36 hours, it needs to be improved, right? So we use all those tools to our advantage and just say, hey, this is what that industry, even though we may not be licensed, because they're irrigation guys, they're all licensed, but many of us are not, as far as the inspection is concerned. We're only licensed by the real estate commission on there. You also have phase two, which is what we call the framing, mechanical, electrical inspection, plumbing as well. And there's a plumbing aspect to the foundation inspection, the pre-pour inspection, because the pre-pour inspection, the plumbing guy has done his stuff and brought all the pipes up where they need to be. So we're looking at that point, we're looking to make sure that those are protected prior to being poured, and they maintain the protection even after pour. They're not having any cracking or anything like that. One thing to make sure, if you ever do a new home where they haven't did the foundation, make sure you emphasize, and the plumber should do it because he doesn't want to come back out and fix broken pipes, that the pipes are pressurized. What they do is they fill them with water and they pressurize it before they pour. There's been numerous cases where they forgot to pressurize it, or they filled it with water, but it leaked out the night before because they didn't pressurize it to make sure it wasn't leaking out, and started pouring concrete and it crushed one of the pipes and everything started backing up on the inside, and nobody knew till they started running water on the inside in the bathroom. So it's little things like that you learn. That's never taught as far as inspections are concerned. You kind of learn it because you talk to the other trades and you kind of do the other things, but it's our job as inspectors to relay that information to real estate agents, because they need to know, because they're usually going to have the biggest impact with the client. They see the client on numerous occasions. We usually see them at the inspection upon arrival, or at the inspection when it's time to go and show them the little bit of things that we found, kind of thing. So at the end of the day, I think that communication is the key to a lot of the stuff that happens on an inspection platform. When I say that, I mean from the communication in person or on the phone and on the report. My reports aren't listed to where it's a narrative type of a report. I try not to have people reading like long lists of things. I try to make it line by line by line. If they have a question as to what it may be or what the concern is, then they can ask about it, because it's there for clarification. But I want to make sure that they're not reading three sentences before I actually get to the point of what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's kind of what I'm looking at there. But the mechanical phase, I usually do a checklist on the mechanical phase and the mechanical framing phase, and I'll go through the house. By Texas law, if I'm not mistaken, the drawings should be on site for the framers, obviously for the plumber, for the electrical, and for the AC guy. And what I kind of equate a lot of this to on a home is the house is like the body, if you can think about it. So obviously the exterior is going to be the skin. The HVAC system is going to be the lungs, or it's breathing. The electrical is going to be the nerves and the just the pulse of the house. Mm-hmm. And then you have the plumbing system, which is going to be the blood running through it, kind of thing, you know? So it kind of plays, if we can kind of talk a little bit through that a little bit with the clients, they kind of get the, okay, this is why it's important. You know, the skin is going to protect you only for so long. And the roof obviously is the head, and you know, you kind of do that thing with them and talk with them about it. It starts to resonate that these are the things that are important. Top's important, bottom's important. You know, if the house isn't breathing, you're gonna build up mold. If it's not breathing, you're gonna have stagnant air. It's gonna build up mold. You know, if your electricity's in bad shape, nothing's gonna work in the house, right? Inclusive of your HVAC. So I try to walk them through a little bit of that stuff and let them know that, hey, this is, when I talk about these things, just kind of relate it to your own self. If you want to protect something, what would you protect? You know, and if, is it, they would always, the question I always get is, how important is that? Or is that important to you? First of all, it's not important to me at all. What's important to me is you. What's important to me is you. And I want to make sure that you understand the importance of all of this, because I'm not going to live here. I'm just telling you my, an objective view and a professional opinion of what's going on this. And I try not to be subjective on anything. Sometimes it kind of leads to that, just because I have to put an example behind it. And I always gotta say, hey, I'm not trying to make it look like this is gonna happen on this house, but in cases anything can happen, you know, I mean, right. We've never had an earthquake here in Houston that I know of, but it could happen. And if the foundation's not completely right, you're gonna have that problem. So We go around the house, we inspect framing, we inspect the anchor bolts for the framing to be attached down to the foundation, based on the drawings, whether they have shear walls or if they have walls that require sheeting, or, you know, that new cardboard looking stuff that's red or green or whatever. We have to look at that. And then we look at that to see if they layered it, how many layers they, where did they nail it at? So there's, that inspection there takes a long time to do. And I try to do the checklist part of it, because I take the checklist and basically rip it off and type in what I need to type in on those particular sections. I still use a Trek report for that, because although it's not Trek requires us to use it for a completed house, it's going to be ready to move in kind of thing. So I can literally use a checklist, but does that help the client in any way? Probably not, because they're looking at a bunch of numbers or looking at sizes of boards, where notches should be, where the plumbing is not sloped properly, or the wrong electrical wire is used in a certain area. So I put it in that area, and I try to put why it's wrong or why it should be corrected on there. So they have a cause and effect on my end of it. And I typically don't, on this particular portion of the inspection, I don't inspect the roof, because I've learned from the past 19 years that they always say, oh, they're not done with the roof, which I know they are, because the roofer's not coming back to do anything. It's the guy that's going to be putting up the siding out there. He's the one that's going to be putting the siding or the brick or something out there. And the roofer's not coming back to do anything, but maybe touch up a couple areas where the brick was going to go, kind of thing. So I wait till the end and I check it out, because ideally a roof in 20 years, it's going to have to be replaced anyway. So once it's finished, then I can go in there. Now, I will always take a peek up there and look and see if there's anything major going on. But this part of the process, if I could see that there's anything that it's not framed properly, it may look like it may have some deflection when the decking has settled in or something like that, mm-hmm. I'll bring it up. But it's, you know, the hard part about all this is that you pay for the inspection. And so it's left up to the client and the agent to make sure it's done, or a follow-up has to be done with their incurs another fee. So, you know, as I kind of equate that to being like a doctor or a lawyer in some sense, just because the time is where the money is involved at on there. But it's part of the profession, any profession that's out there. If there's more work that needs to be done, I typically don't include the follow-up fee in there, only because I may be dealing with an engineer, a foundation engineer. He just wanted a second opinion to make sure he had something from a third party, write something up, and he's going to take care of it from there. You know, he could be doing, how many times have I done a house inspection for an engineer and they never wanted me to come back out because they were going to take it. They know the specs. They know everything that's going on. Does it happen a lot? Maybe in my case, but not overall. I mean, the percentages are really low, but someone that's savvy in the construction background, or maybe he's an electrician by trade, he's not going to care if I come back out because he's going to make sure it's taken care of from what he knows, he or she knows. So we've met a lot in that industry. And then there's, I try to break it to three inspections because the final inspection really is what ties it all together. And if some of the work isn't done, I probably won't know, but I'll probably be able to figure it out sometime down the way on the final inspection. And we're, at this point, we're just trying to make sure the house was done, everything was done to where it meets the needs of the client to move into the house. I want to make sure that that house is, you know, there's not wet paint. There's not what they're paying for. Now, I talk about paint a little bit just because that's the first thing that people see on a home when they walk in. They want to make sure the paint's the color they pick. It's not smeared, smudged, or on the carpet or anything like that. But we're looking at tile. We're looking at carpet and tile to make sure those transitions are right. We're looking at doors to make sure they line up. There's a whole nother aspect of inspections on this part. Well, now we're in checking appliances. We're running the water heater. We're checking the, we're making sure the house is breathing. They've got water pumping through it. The water temperatures get to where it needs to be. It's not overly scalding. There's a safety component to the final inspection. You know, this, at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we can tell you, yeah, we feel it's pretty safe to move it. Or here's a list of things that they didn't do right, not necessarily unsafe, but these are things you probably need to follow up for your 1 year warranty. And that's kind of where we kind of end it. We give them a little booklet at the end and says, hey, this is the things you need to kind of look into. You can find it online, or I can give you the hard copy. And typically I tell people the first year, keep this book on your coffee table so you can read through it, thumb through it, just make sure. Because first time homebuyers, even second or third time homebuyers, things have changed since they bought their first house, or there's new components that are out there with tankless water heaters or something like that that they didn't see before. And it'll be good for them to educate themselves. And if it's coming from an inspector standpoint, say, hey, you know, this and this and this, there was a gas leak at your tankless water heater. I think they need to tighten up the fittings on there. Took pictures of it with bubbles and stuff like that. You know, now they're going to pay attention to that kind of stuff. They're going to look around a little better. But it's always good to tell them that, hey, you're going to spend a lot of time at Home Depot after the first year because you're going to want to start caulking and sealing and doing those things on your own. You know, Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace Hardware, whatever is your local place, just go in there and look around, because that's going to be your resource. You're not going to call your inspector for everything. You're going to walk into the store and you're going to ask the guy in the plumbing section, hey, what do I do about this? You know, right. So it's always that, you know, we always leave the door open for a phone call, but the return phone calls that we usually get are not, it's usually for another inspection. It's not for, hey, I have this and I don't know about this. And we're not, you know, like I said, our touches with the client are not as much as the agents or the sales rep that's for the builder and stuff like that. So we try to make the most impact in the short time that we have. And I, you know, we try not to scare the client either. That's one of the biggest things, because we could be talking over their head, especially a single mom that's trying to move into a house with a young baby or something, or a couple kids, and just, you know, she's just trying to make things better. And if I talk over, it's probably going to freak her out, but two, it's probably going to make her think like, am I really wanting to do this? Because when I was renting it, I just made a phone call and that guy came out to fix it. So that my job is to make sure I maintain the waters as a calm waters, not something that's going to come crashing in. And they know that they have resources that they can use on that. So, yeah.
No, that's good to know. What are your thoughts? Dealing with people who have purchased new homes, you know, they normally tell you when you're doing your final walkthrough, you know, keep an eye out for certain things, and that, you know, you have your 1 year warranty. And I've heard some say to wait for certain items closer to when you're getting toward that 1 year to request everything. Is that a good time to do another inspection?
So here's what I've told clients. I've told them a couple in two ways. Look, if it's not anything big, if it's not anything major, build your list. Just build your list for a little while. Build your list. You know, you're getting to that 6 month mark. Okay, make that walk around the house again. See if there's anything else. See if there's any loose bricks, something that may have just gotten more weathered over time and it's taken more of a beating and it's not doing the grading and drainage, gutters coming down and wearing out the soil in a certain area is one of those things. You know, look at those things. And if it's something you need to, that you need to put together on paper, you put it on paper. You get your feedback, you know, about a month, I would say about month 10 before the year's getting close. About month 10, you start sending that stuff in. So here's what I want. This is what I want. If they don't gauge that they're going to get any kind of response, or that they feel like the response is lacking from the builder that should be responding, saying, okay, we're going to get somebody to come out. Okay. Then you might want to say, by the way, I'm going to have an inspector come out and maybe call their bluff a little bit. I'm going to have an inspector come out. I'm going to put this all in writing, because everything that you do up to this point is going to be based on the level of experience that you had with them doing stuff prior to you moving into the house. How well were they responding to any of the repairs that you requested? How well were they responding to any of the adjustments that you made or the upgrades that you put in afterwards? Anything like that, you want to use that to your advantage and your experience. And we talked about experience a little while ago. Having that experience is going to put you in a position to gauge your level of your threat level, if you will. If they're constantly, if 90% of the time when you send an email, all you're looking for is a response, an acknowledgement of that, or a phone call, just acknowledgement, or saying something like when we talk to the kids, hey, I said something, okay. So all you're looking for is that response. But if you get 2-3 days in, 4 days in, and there's not a response saying, I got your message, I'm going to work on this and let me see what I can do, then you're like, okay, I got to do something else here, because someone's not responding to me. Do I need to go higher up? Now, if it goes, you send that response, you still get nothing. You send that response, that's a red alert. You need to say, what's going on here? I'm going to get my inspector out, because now it's about documentation. How many times you sent that information? How many times they responded or not responded? Now I'm getting another inspection done, because I want to make sure that I have all my ducks in a row, because if I have to go and file a claim against these guys, I want to know that I gave them ample amount of time. And in what court of public opinion is going to say, well, Dev called you 15 times. He got one response out of that. Or he emailed and called 15 to 20 times and he got one response. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's going to be the biggest driving factor. So it really is based on their response to what they're receiving with regards to that. Because I would hate for a client to pay me $200 to come out and do an inspection on their house. They've had no problems. They've had no issues. Now, how many clients get on the roof and walk around and know what the shingles look like? And that's probably what the most thing they're going to probably pay me for is looking at the foundation and looking at the roof.
Right.
And typically what I tell my clients is, give me a list of what you have issues with, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a glance at it and see if it's anything else. In the attic, I'm going to walk in there. I'm going to take maybe 10 minutes. I'm going to look around and see if anything. So what I typically do, if I did the original inspection, I'll go back and look at my report and my pictures prior to going out. And if I said there was a rafter separating or something like that, I'll go back and look and see if they did anything with that rafter. If they did nothing, I'm going to note on the report. Rafter was reported on original inspection report. 12 months later or 10 months later, rafter is still in the same condition that it was during the inspection, the original inspection. That kind of stuff. Or if I asked for sealant to be put around nails or something on the roof, they didn't do that kind of stuff. So I'll note it back on there and tell them, hey, you need to get somebody out here. I mean, really, it's at the builder's leisure when they send someone out, but I think at some point in time they're required by their own forms to perform the repairs prior to the 1 year expiration, or sign something with the client saying, hey, we're going to get to this within the next month, although it's going to be after your warranty expiration is taking place. So
I like your method behind it, because it's not just you trying to get an inspection, but it's more of, does it make sense to do it at that point? And especially if they've worked with you before, you have a reference of what existed prior, and did it get better? I mean, did they fix it or did it get worse?
And one thing I try to do is send all my pictures for whatever inspection we do. I send the client that link of pictures so they can thumb through it at their leisure over the next year. Some of the pictures, it's just me taking a picture of my orientation around the house, so I know where I'm at when I'm writing the report. But I'm one of the few inspectors nowadays that do not write the report on site. I won't do that. I think it's putting yourself as an inspector at risk to miss something, but I also, you're not doing the client. I mean, for me, you're not doing the client the justice of reviewing what you're saying and what you're doing and getting the right information for them. Because a lot of times the agents will use, hey, this is what the inspector wrote as the code for this. Now, many inspectors are not code inspectors for Trek, but it's a reference. It's a reference for what Trek is using for their standards of practice for the inspector. So it's good to have those in there because, and I always say, I'm not a code inspector, although I am for certain aspects of the code. But what I try to do is I try to tell them that, you know, this is the reference, and based on this information that's in the code, how do you interpret it? You know, and if I'm interpreting it this way, what makes me think you're not interpreting it another way? So let the client make that request. How are you interpreting this? Like, there's some that are very plain and clear. Pocket formers need to be sealed and stuff like that after the pour of the foundation. There are some that, you know, if you use a certain type of wood, it can be this length, but if you double it, you can be this length or this length, you know? So it depends on what the code is, but at the same time, you have other industries that have their own version of it as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As an agent, I'm not going to sit here and say I know all of that.
Right.
You know, you don't necessarily know all that. You learn as the business goes, but to sit there and if you need an inspection or have questions, it's time to get an inspector.
And no, absolutely. You
know, new homes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So the new home process, I think, let me just take a step back and say the new home process has been a little hindered and hurdled by some of the legal documents that are out there and requirements by the builder. There are some builders that require a home inspector to carry like a $1 or $2 million policy. Why? I have no idea. They claim that it's because inspectors have left water on, they've left stuff on site. So part of the reason why I don't want workers in my area is because that way I don't know if a worker turned the water on washing his hands in the tub or something and I was done with that area and he did what he needed to do. We don't play those games. So and I don't carry $2 million policy. It's not worth for me to carry that type of policy. And then the builder wants a copy of the certificate of the insurance. Wow. So there's been inspections that I refuse. I won't do. And I'll tell the client, if you still want to use me, you can use me for your 1 year inspection or right after you close and we can write everything up and you can submit it to them. I go, but I'm not going to do that because it's not doing you any justice as a client for me to do the inspection with that type, because I'm going to have to pass those costs on to you. And right. It's not going to put you in a position to where you're going to get any headway because they're going to hinder the process legally mm-hmm. by doing those types of things. So we just don't. I know inspectors that carry it, but and they say they do it all day. I'm like, that's not something I want to pass on to my client.
Right. Well, you know, the builder process from beginning to end, especially they have their own lenders, they have their whole process is to benefit them. And, you know, not knocking it because sometimes you get great financing right. through them, but a lot of times people just don't go in understanding this whole right. process, the paperwork, everything is to cover the builder. It's not yeah. to cover the client at all.
Yeah. And I'm not talking bad about the builders in themselves. I just know the experience that I've had over, I'm going to say, I mean, we can name 10 of them and all 10 of them may do exactly the same thing and have different caveats of what they're more strict on and what they're not. I mean, there's builders out there, like I said, I want that $2 million policy. And then there's builders that could care less. Come on. We're not going to fix it anyway, or we're going to do everything that you asked for. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
So, and myself, the agent and the client are all at the mercy of what they want to do or don't want to do at some point in time. So I've asked clients before, where's your line in the sand? What are you willing, not willing to do to get this house, because they're gonna use every tactic they possibly can to close that house. Whether it is you're gonna lose your interest rate, whether it is they're not gonna fix it, or we got somebody else waiting. You're more than welcome to back out. You're not gonna get your money back, kind of thing. So everything is utilized, like you said, to their advantage. I mean, it's a business. It's a business. How many people have walked in and with that we don't know about, put money down in the house, let them build whatever, add thousands and thousands of dollars of upgrades, and said, you know, I don't want it. Yeah. You got to think it started somewhere.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes they can get screwed too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You got to think that's probably why.
Yeah. It is a business, and I'm not knocking them. I think new homes are beautiful, but I also think you have to be knowledgeable and not go into it thinking just because it's new.
Yeah.
You know, you just go into it with a completely different mindset. You have to be, you know, have knowledge on what you're getting into.
Yeah. That's the thing with a lot of clients. They, I don't need an inspection. Well, I'm not saying you need an inspection in any means. I never try to sell the service. The service should sell itself, mm-hmm. In my opinion, but you know, at the end of the day, the client should understand that there are so many different trades that go in there. I just talked about five of them just because of what the main components are, but all those trades are there's sub guys that come into those things, and they're running wires, they're running duct work and stuff like that. It's just the master electrician that's signing off on it was done per what the drawing says, you know. So how did the guy frame the door? Did he put all the shims in there the appropriate way? You don't see that stuff, you know?
No, you don't.
It's just
pretty.
Yeah, it just looks good. And the door, as long as it opens and closes, it's okay. But I've done my fair share in the past, and it's so different from a person building their own customized house. How much cooperation you get versus a community where it's just someone buying a house and it's part of their inventory and they're doing what they need to do. And it's just, you know, the parts where the wheels stop moving is when you write something up that they didn't do right and you got to get them to get the trade back out there to fix it. That's really the hardest part for the builder. Okay. Finding them to come back and fix it that way. And then, how many times have I gotten called? Well, what do you mean by this? You know, the trade's calling and trying to figure out how it's done right. But, and here's the thing. These guys have been doing it for years, so they know that's how it's supposed to be done. They don't know that the changes have taken place. Or if they do know that the change has taken place, they're not aware of getting the information off to the guys that are actually doing the work. Mm-hmm. So they may know. But the guy that's actually doing the work doesn't know, because then it was never told to them, and they're just their labor, you know.
Yeah.
So
and they want it done quickly. So
yeah. Some of these are built. I mean, they bid them based on getting them done quickly, you know. So
yeah.
They want to get in and out. Well, did I touch everything that we wanted to touch on for the phase inspection?
Yeah, you went over everything. I learned a lot just sitting here listening, so I appreciate it.
Some things coming down the pipeline that may or may not affect, but we have some ways of getting rid of things. And majority of the time, whether it's bugs or rodents, as long as they're not in the house, people are okay with it.
Yes, that's true.
So that goes hand in hand with inspections as well, because there's actually a code about rodent proofing.
Okay.
So
that's cool. Well, that's going to be the next time we talk. I'm looking forward to it. It's a lot of information.
All right, me too.
Well, you know, it just makes you aware you can't specialize in everything. So you have to have people that do the different parts to make the machine run smoothly.